You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
On the fifth day of June 1944, just as you see them here, a fleet of more than 4,000 ships put out from England. This was D-Day, fourth anniversary of the Battle of Dunkirk, and the Allied armies were striking back. Fleet was underway.
Well, good morning. I am here with military expert David Seiler. Junior or the third?
I'm just junior.
Junior. Yep. Okay, David Seiler, Junior. And if you know David Seiler, Junior, you know that when it comes to expert, when you hear the word expert, nothing comes to mind like Dave Seiler. I know that.
It's true.
So we are grateful here. But actually, Dave actually is a military history buff.
Yes.
And we've been talking about this. This is my prime group leader, and I've been talking about this in our prime group for a number of weeks, just because of your habit of 2 a.m. military documentary watching.
It's a bad habit.
It's a bad habit. But actually, you also have you're a veteran. You have
yes.
a military service. So can you tell us a little bit about just that briefly so we can know you a little bit more?
Yeah, I joined the Army in 96. I got out in 2005, and kind of in between that, I worked in Virginia Beach. I was stationed in Hawaii, and I was kind of spoiled that I was in the Army, but I worked in boats. So I was always kind of around a Navy base, and basically, ironically, I worked on landing craft, kind of like what you see there, beach assault, that sort of thing.
Cool.
Yeah, I had shorter hair then and kind of a smaller waistline, but that's true.
So, yeah, the military is hard. Virginia Beach, Hawaii. Thanks for your service.
Yeah, it was very difficult.
But actually, related to this, you know, for the most part, I think we're all pretty much aware of the D-Day invasion of Normandy. But I wanted to talk today about what is called, let me get it right here, Operation Bodyguard. Now, the main D-Day invasion was called Operation Overlord,
yes.
Correct? Right. Okay. So tell us a little bit about Operation Bodyguard and what that was all about.
Operation Bodyguard was kind of the ultimate deception. We sort of like MI6, I mean, it involves all this great spy stuff. And basically the plan was is we had 3,000 miles of, or, you know, we covered 3,000 miles of the Atlantic seawall. So that invasion could be anywhere. And we basically kind of tried to steer the Germans in every direction other than Normandy.
Okay.
So we knew that we were going to put deception in. We had fake agents. We had fake paperwork. We had fake armies. We had everything going to basically steer the Germans to look everywhere other than Normandy. So it was a lot of deception. Basically, it was you always want kind of a 3-to-1 ratio to attack. And we basically wanted to get the weakest and softest areas in Normandy where we planned to go. But it's fascinating. If anybody researches it, it involves dummies out of planes, parachute drops, all kinds of fascinating stuff. But basically, it's just the ultimate deception.
Right, because I know that, and I did a little study on some of this too. And there's basically this whole idea of, of military diversions has what are called feints or demonstrations, displays, or ruses, which are different things. And the whole point was that you're not necessarily telling them that we're not going to invade. Like this is the Allies, of course, with Operation Bodyguard and the against the Germans and the Axis. It was a while ago, 1940s. But the idea was to make them think that we were going to invade somewhere else. And I think Calais is the closest in France. It's the closest to England through the English Channel, which I'm assuming, I don't really know this, I didn't look this up, but I'm guessing
Dover Strait.
If that's where people are swimming the channel, that's probably where they're doing
yes,
it.
Yes, the Dover
Strait. So that made the most sense. And so part of Operation Bodyguard was to get Germany to believe that we were going to invade there.
Yes.
When in fact, Normandy was the main target.
Absolutely. And in the deception was just absolutely, like I said, was absolutely fascinating. And it made sense that that was the smallest part. So you just sent fake radio traffic. I mean, you actually had people arguing back and forth on the radio. And the deception was so good that when we actually did invade Normandy, they still kept their troops in Calais because they thought Normandy was the diversion. So we had them steered that far in the wrong direction.
Yeah,
so.
I read something. It was like 7 days, I think, later. Yeah. Like, after we invaded, the Allies invaded Normandy, then they're still saying send reinforcements, and the German troops refused to send them because they were sure that Normandy was a diversion.
Yeah.
And so the troops, even though we were on soil, the Allies were on German-occupied soil, they still refused to send troops there. So would you say, in your military expertise, knowledge, you know, expert equals Dave, would you say that Operation Bodyguard was effective?
I would say it was absolutely effective. I mean, we look at Normandy now, and of course it was, so many deaths in Normandy, but it could have been, we were already planning on probably five times the amount had we invaded Normandy or how we invaded a defended position like that. We were probably looking at like five times the amount of casualties that we had. So I think it was an absolute success. And it's an awesome story. It's a great 2 a.m. documentary story.
So. Yeah, and there are so many levels. There's actually levels of operations underneath Operation Bodyguard. And we were talking the other night, and you can look up this on your own. But one of the things that they actually did was they dressed up a dead guy in an officer's uniform and put secret documents on him. And I don't know if they parachuted him. I'm not sure what happened, but he was found.
Yeah, he was found.
And they were like, ooh, we found this officer's secret documents. And that was a whole nother thing. So, this whole idea of diversion is a big deal. And of course, you are probably very familiar with the classic, maybe not the original, but the one of the earliest diversionary tactics in warfare through the Battle of Troy. Through the Trojan horse, which, of course, they thought it was a gift, and inside the horse was the army prepared for invasion. And it's really interesting. I find this kind of stuff interesting. I mean, there's all sorts of tactics. We don't have time to get into all of those.
Yes.
But the point is that in almost every major intentional war and battle, there are diversionary tactics put in place to allow the, you know, whatever side is trying to achieve their goal.
Oh, for sure.
Absolutely. So thank you very much.
Give it up for
Dave, our military expert. And thank you. Don't forget to turn your mic off in case you go to the bathroom. Anything like that. But I want to talk this morning and about this idea. This is the last week of this Building Blocks series. And I want to talk about this idea of diversionary tactics. If you remember a couple weeks ago, I was very clear, let's say, that the enemy is the enemy, that we are not the enemy, and, you know, the president or former president, they're not the enemy, and the media is not the enemy. None of those things are the enemy. The enemy is the enemy, is Satan. And it is my opinion, and I think it's biblical, so it's beyond just my opinion, but the enemy likes to use diversionary tactics to get us going after a goal over here, so that we forget that this is the actual goal. And so I want to talk about that this morning as we look at this idea of the final building block. And the fancy church word for this that we're going to be looking at today is called evangelism. But the idea of sharing Jesus with other people. Because this is the goal. Jesus is the goal. He is the ultimate aim in everything that we do. I was reflecting on this yesterday, and there's there was a Christian boy band back in the late 90s, and they had a song that's pretty deep, and the title was "Forever is a Long Time." So, but it's true. Eternity is forever. Eternity is a long time. And what we're doing is about reaching people for Jesus because it's going to affect their eternity. And I'm afraid that sometimes we get diverted and we end up doing this thing and spending our time and spinning our wheels focusing on this over here. And we're like, this is important. And Satan's like, yeah, go there. Meanwhile, these people over here are going to hell without Jesus because we're so focused on this and not that. And so the point that I want us to get today, this final building block with this series, is to build your relationship with God, you need to tell others about Him passionately. To build your relationship with God, you need to tell others about Him passionately. Why don't we turn on the house lights here if we can? And I'm gonna look at a passage in John chapter 4. And I just want to tell you right now. Right now, this is being live streamed. If you're not in the building, we have our new fancy hanging camera off of the floor. And by the way, just in case, that is not a target to see if you can hit it. Okay? I know some of you can just stand and touch it. I cannot, so it's not like a jumping contest or anything like that. But all I have to say is that this is being recorded and it's online. So what I'm about to fly through here in John 4, if you miss anything, you can go back and watch it at mc3church.org, and then you can click on the Building Blocks series and look at that. But I want to look at this passage in John chapter 4 because I think it's so important when it comes to the idea of telling others about Jesus and why, and frankly, how Jesus does it. So I want to just share, and you're going to have a chance, again, in your prime groups to discuss this a little bit. And as I said to the prime leaders, please don't get bogged down on this because we really want to get to kind of the next part. But everything that we're talking about today is the payoff. This is the result of everything else that we've been looking at this with this series, is that we're building these blocks in us, these disciplines, these habits, so that we are more like Jesus, and ultimately so that we can share Jesus with the world. He is the hope of the world. So in John chapter 4, I want to look at how Jesus shares about sharing, well, Jesus. So now this is sort of not fair, but if Jesus is sharing about Jesus and he being Jesus, he's sharing about himself. And we're going to talk about someone else and how they share about Jesus. But I want to look at some of the quick things on Jesus sharing about Jesus. And this is John chapter 4. And we're going to be looking at like 35 verses. So again, we're going to go quick. The first thing we see with Jesus, and these are principles that we can take, we should take when it comes to how do we tell others about Jesus. The first thing is to take risks. To take risks. Jesus took risks. And sometimes we're afraid of taking risks and taking those extra steps because, you know, for different reasons. And we're going to talk about some of those reasons, some of these diversions a little bit later. But in John chapter 4, verses 1 to 6, again, I'm going to fly through this. It said, Jesus knew the Pharisees had heard that he was baptizing and making more disciples than John, though Jesus himself didn't baptize him, his disciples did. So he left Judea and returned to Galilee. He had to go through Samaria on the way. Now, I want you to understand something about this. Jesus did not have to go through Samaria. As a matter of fact, most Jewish people intentionally did not go through Samaria because Samaritans were the hated race. They were the ones that if, you know, we talked about this in the story series last year. They were the ones that intermarried when they were in exile. They weren't pure blood Jewish people. And so a good Jewish person would actually go around Samaria. It was even a longer trip. And they would go around Samaria so that they did not have to interact or go through the land of the Samaritans. But here we see that Jesus had to go through Samaria on the way. He intentionally went there. He took risks. He was kind of he broke the boundaries. He broke down the walls of what it meant to be a follower, to be at that point a Jewish person. And so it says he had to go to Samaria. Eventually he came to the Samaritan village of Sychar, near the field that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired from the long walk, sat wearily beside the well about noontime. So he took risks. He went there. And if we're going to reach people for Jesus, it's going to require us to take risks. We're going to have to get a little bit uncomfortable. We're going to have to do things that don't quite fit the mold, that don't quite fit the crowd. The second thing we see is that Jesus, when it comes to sharing, Jesus says, be kind. Be kind. And I think right now, you know, there's so much hate. Everybody hates about everybody hating on everything. I mean, whatever that is, like we hate on big issue things like running our country, and we hate on little issue things on which way this chicken should be cooked. I mean, like it's all over. And for us to be kind, it's actually going to stand out in a huge way. And again, we're going to come back to that in a little bit too. But going on in verses 7 and 9, Jesus was kind. And by the way, kindness, we did a series called Fruit a couple of years ago. Kindness is a fruit of the Spirit, which means kindness is a result of God being at work in your life. So just for the record, kindness is something that we should be. And it says, soon a Samaritan woman came to draw water. And Jesus said to her, please give me a drink. He was alone at the time because the disciples had gone into the village to buy some food. The woman was surprised. for Jews refused to have anything to do with Samaritans. She said to Jesus, "You are a Jew, and I am a Samaritan woman. Why are you asking me for a drink?" And so just the fact that Jesus was willing to talk to this Samaritan woman, which the woman thing, that's a whole other issue, but these are two things that weren't typically done by a Jewish male. And Jesus was just simply demonstrating kindness, and she was shocked. She's like, why are you being nice to me? What? Your kind doesn't talk to my kind. Why would you be kind to me? And so being kind is another part of reaching people for Jesus. One of the things that I've heard someone say when it comes to sharing this message of Jesus, like, sometimes Christians, Christ followers, cut off someone's nose and then offer a rose to smell. We're so interested in proving our point, and we'll get to that in a little bit too, that we're like, we have this so important thing, and then in the process, they're not interested in the Jesus we have to share because we're not kind, because we're not nice to that. So he was kind. The third thing is meet needs. Meet needs. And this is something that we try to do, and we're going to talk more about this next week when I share about Spring Back. But this idea of saying, people have needs. And you've probably heard the phrase, and we're going to come back to this a little bit too, but the idea, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And sometimes our job isn't to necessarily say, let me tell you about Jesus. Maybe our job is to say, let me help you with the need that you have right now, and then use that to tell you about Jesus. Because sometimes they don't care if we haven't, if we're not willing to help them meet their needs. And so it says, going on to verses 10 to 15, it says, Jesus replied, "If you only knew the gift of God has for you and who you are speaking to, you would ask me and I would give you living water." And then I'm going to kind of summarize a little bit here. She basically says, "But sir, you don't have a bucket. How are you going to do this? And how are you going to give me living water?" And he goes on and says, "Anyone who has this water that I'm offering, they'll live forever. They won't need to." Go to the next slide there. They'll never become thirsty again. And so at the end, she says, "Please, sir," the woman said, "give me this water. Then I'll never be thirsty again, and I won't have to come here to get water." See, she's at a well because that's what the task is at hand. That's her need. Her current need is water. And Jesus says, "Well, let me give you water. I'm going to meet the current need that you have." He's offering her something deeper. And again, we don't have time to get into all of this because I want to get to some things later. But this is what's often called a felt need. And that is the idea that sometimes there are things like, this is really important to me, when ultimately the real need is Jesus. And this is what Trigo y Miel is so amazing about in Oaxaca. They're like, you know what? The real need for these kids is Jesus. There's no question. But in order to be able to share the real need, to share the real hope through Jesus, they have another need because their stomachs are empty and they need food. And so Trigo meets that felt need, meets that immediate need and says, "We're going to give you food." And then it gives them a platform to share Jesus, which is the real need. Because as we know, food's temporary. You're going to eat after this, and then you're going to eat again later because you're going to want more because we do that. But the Jesus, the real need, is something that's going to last forever. And so he met her needs there. The fourth thing is address pain. And this is kind of gets weird. But we're not talking about like making people hurt, but sometimes we need to kind of draw out like, your issue isn't that you're thirsty. Your issue is that you've got a deeper longing, a deeper problem inside. And so this idea of addressing the pain and being real about the real issues helps to bring up the idea that, oh yeah, I guess I do need Jesus. I guess there is a reason that you're offering that to me. And this is what happens in verse 16 to 18. Now, I wouldn't recommend that you do this. Now, granted, Jesus is the Son of God. He is fully man, fully God. So he knows everything about her. But follow what's going on here. He says, "Go and get your husband," Jesus told her. "I don't have a husband," the woman replied. Jesus said, "You're right. You don't have a husband, for you have had five husbands, and you aren't even married to the man you're living with now. You certainly spoke the truth." And so, now this would be like, Jesus, you're cruel, man. What? Come on. But his point was, he was exposing, obviously, that this woman, she's got some relational baggage. She's got some relational hurt. Like, I don't know how many husbands Joan Rivers had. Was it Joan Rivers? Joan Collins? Joan Cleaver? June Cleaver? Anyway, but that lady that had all those husbands. Was it Elizabeth Taylor? Phyllis Diller. It's all of them. I don't know. Maybe they're the same person. I don't know. I just wasn't around then. But the whole idea of, like, you know, he wasn't trying to be cruel, but he was just trying to open up and say, you know what? I don't think your real need is water. I think you're hurting relationally. And so he kind of exposing a little bit of that so that he has room to share the gospel, to share the message of hope through Jesus. And so that's what he was doing. He was addressing the pain. And I think we need to be real about the pain. There is pain out there. We're going to get to that in a little bit too. But we need to be okay with saying, yeah, that's not the best. Yeah, that hurts. Yeah, I'm sorry that you had to go through that. I feel bad that that happened to you. But we need to be willing to address it because, again, people are like, I don't care about your Jesus. I have some real hurt here. But if we can show how our Jesus, my Jesus, can help address that hurt, then that's so much more valuable. So then the next thing is avoid diversions. And we're going to come back to these a lot. But here, the woman realizes, okay, wait, starting to get a little personal here. Let's change the subject. And so that's what she does in verse 19. And I'm just going to summarize this too, because as you can see, there's a lot to read there. But basically, she says at the beginning, she says, I see you must be a prophet. Well, apparently you know what's going on. So tell me this. And she brings up this ongoing debate about whether the Jews, where they're supposed to worship God versus where the Samaritans are supposed to worship God. And so it becomes this debate and this discussion. And she knows that this is something that people are constantly dealing with. And so she's like, I know what I'll do. I'll distract him with this. I'll get him to focus on this issue instead of on the real issue at stake here. And so that is what is happening with this particular spot, is that she's uncomfortable and she's trying to get him off track. And so basically he doesn't fall for it. that's the short version of it. He doesn't fall for it. He's Jesus. And so then he goes on. And the very last thing, that we see here is that we should, is that we should share Jesus. So Jesus shares Jesus. He shares himself. In verses 25 and 26, it says, the woman said, I know that the Messiah is coming, the one who is called Christ. When he comes, he will explain everything to us. Then Jesus told her, Luke, I am the Messiah. Her name might not have been Luke. I see that moment there. I don't know. But he says, I'm the Messiah. I'm the one. And in your prime groups, you're going to have the chance to talk about it. Like, unfortunately, when it comes to sharing Jesus, this is where we get uncomfortable. This is where we're like, let's just stop. And if we don't actually get to share Jesus, all we're doing is really good, nice things. It makes us feel good. It maybe makes them feel good. But it's not going to matter for eternity. And so Jesus gets to this point, doesn't let her distract him, and says, look, I am the hope. I am the Messiah. I am the one that you have been waiting for. And so for us, when it comes to sharing Jesus with others, we need to make sure that we actually get to sharing Jesus. Doing nice things for other people doesn't matter for eternity if we stop there. The most important part was that Jesus offered himself to this woman as the Messiah. Apart from Jesus, the rest is just niceness. And we have to remember that there is a purpose. There is an eternal purpose when it comes to caring for others. So that's how Jesus did it. I don't think any of you are the Son of God, but I think there's some things that we can learn from what he did here. But it's kind of easy to be like, well, I'm not Jesus, so whatever. I'm not able to do that. Well, let's look at what the Samaritan woman did, because she also shared Jesus. So the Samaritan woman on sharing. So what did the Samaritan woman do to share Jesus? She said, come and see. Come and see. She didn't have all the answers, and we're going to get to that. She didn't explain everything. She didn't know all the details, but she said, come and see. And that's what verses 27 to 30 says. The disciples came back. They were shocked to see he was talking to a woman. And then it says, the woman left her water jar beside the well and ran back to her village, telling everyone, come and see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could he possibly be the Messiah? So the people came streaming from the village to see him. See, here's a woman that had, we're talking minutes. Her life was transformed by Jesus. And now she's going out and saying, look, I don't know all the answers. I don't even have a background of theology or any of that. I don't know what doctrine is, but I can say, come and see this man. Because I think he could be the Messiah. I think he is the Messiah. Come and see. And the people came streaming from the village. And then over in, actually I said John 27 to 30, but that's not right. Over in John chapter 4, verse 39, there's an epilogue. Go ahead and click that there. It says 27, that's the wrong verse. It's beginning in verse 39, and this is the epilogue. It says, many Samaritans from the village believed in Jesus because the woman had said, he told me everything I ever did. When they came out to see him, they begged him to stay in their village. So he stayed for 2 days, long enough for many more to hear his message and believe. Then they said to the woman, now we believe, not just because of what you told us, but because we have heard him for ourselves. Now we know that he is indeed the Savior of the world. And so this isn't that hard. And I think, and I mean, I grew up in church. I grew up being told, you know, evangelism is important, and here's the things, and how many, you know, I've heard phrases like soul winning, and how many people came to Jesus because of you this week, and like all sorts of baggage that we have laid onto this thing, which is unfortunately the most important thing, but we've got all this baggage that has become diversions. And I think, I'm not certain, I don't know Satan's mind, but I think that that's part of his plan. Because if he can keep us from actually sharing the hope that we have in Jesus, then he's won. Then he has succeeded. So if we can focus on this diversion over here or this diversion over here and not actually say, let me tell you about Jesus, then he has won. And so the point, next slide there, sorry. The point is, I went flying. To build your relationship with God, you need to tell others about him passionately. So that was the fast part. And again, there's so much we could have unpacked there, so much there. But I want to get into this idea of the diversions, of the things that are holding us back from telling people about Jesus. And it's so important because, again, you know, not that we were, I'm glad that the Allies won the war. But, you know, the Axis powers, the Germans, were completely deceived by these diversionary tactics and missed the fact that an entire raiding force came onto their beach and made their way into the country that they had occupied and then kept coming. And the Germans still felt like, no, that's not really the focus. Over here, this is where it's really going to happen. And I would say that probably lost them the war. I mean, there were so many parts of it, but that invasion being such a huge part about it. And I think the same thing is happening for us. If we can, we sometimes get so focused over here that we miss that the goal is about sharing Jesus with people. That's what matters. He is what matters. So I want to talk about avoiding the diversions. And every time with this series is the last day of the series, but we've looked at this kind of question of how. How do we do this? So how do we tell others about Jesus passionately? And so it's by avoiding these diversions. So here's the first diversion. Don't hate the world. Instead, see like Jesus. And now to be clear, Jesus said, don't love the world. But sometimes I think we kind of put these two things together and we're like, things are awful out there. Have you been out there? Like, the world kind of sucks. There are some awful things. There are some awful people. There's some awful junk happening. And it's very easy to be like, I hate this. I hate them. And whatever the they or the them is, it's easy to categorize. And, you know, if you're a conservative, you hate the liberals. And if you're a liberal, you hate the conservatives. And if you're a KFC fan, you hate Chick-fil-A. And if you hate Chick-fil-A, you don't love Jesus. But that's a separate thing. No. But, you know, I mean, and then there's like the real truth is Taco Bell is king. But anyway, but you know what I'm saying? Like we get so, we hate these things and all of a sudden we start packaging these things together and we're like, I hate them, I hate those people, I hate that thing. And the problem with that is that it's a diversion because when we start hating someone or something, we're not going to want to share hope and love with them. Like, it's natural. If we hate someone, we're not going to want to show them love. And so instead of hating the world, and again, I don't mean falling in love with the world and fitting into everything the world does, but we need to see like Jesus. And in Matthew chapter 9, verse 36, look at this. This says, when he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were confused and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. And see, I think sometimes we need to get that perspective. And I don't mean this in a higher, mightier than thou, holier than thou, whatever. But sometimes we just need to look at people and be like, yeah, you know what? The reason they're acting like that is because they don't have Jesus. They don't have anyone to point them in the right direction. They don't have an internal, you know, guiding force called the Holy Spirit to lead them. And so sometimes instead of getting angry at the world, we just need to see the way Jesus sees them. And of course, if you're like, okay, that's one thing. He was on the cross, being nailed to the cross. And what were his three words? Father, forgive them. Like even in that moment, he still had compassion for the people. And we're going to talk about that next month with the Sorry Not Sorry series, looking at this idea of forgiveness and handling things like that. So we need to see like Jesus sees. And that's going to affect things. And it's easy to get mad at the world, but sometimes we need to remember that that is the world that Jesus died for. And let's be honest, you were one of those people that Jesus died for. So we need to just, instead of hating, let's just back up and say and see people like Jesus sees them. Because again, I feel like that's a diversion. If Satan, if the enemy can get us angry at the people we're supposed to love, he's won. Instead, see people like Jesus. The second thing is don't have the answers. Instead, share your story. And I've heard this a lot of times, and this is me too. I mean, okay, I've got a master's degree in Christian education. I have an undergraduate degree in Bible. And I am worried when I talk to someone that, what if I don't have all the answers? So I'm not trying to flaunt my amazingness or anything like that. I'm just saying, this idea of not having all the answers, it's not like people are like, oh, that's easy for you. No, it's not. And sometimes we are so worried about, well, I don't want to talk to someone about Jesus because I don't know everything. I'm not a great theologian. I'm not that knowledgeable. I don't know all the Bible. I don't know all the books of the Bible. I'm not even sure how to pronounce some of the books of the Bible. And we're kind of like use that. And I think Satan says, if we can get them concerned about what they don't know and keep them from actually talking about Jesus, then he's won. It's a diversion. Instead, share your story. And the thing is about your story is that it's yours. And you can share your story, and there is zero way that I can refute your story. Unless you say you flew somewhere or something. But you know what I'm saying? Like, for the most part, I can't be like, oh, well, no, Jesus didn't make you change your heart like that. Like, there's no way. Instead of worrying about all the answers, just share your story. And in John chapter 9, I'm going to summarize here because this is another 34 verses. But this is the story of the man that was born blind or was blind from birth. And Jesus basically goes and sees this man begging, and he puts some spit into some mud because, you know, and rubs it in the guy's eyes and says, go and wash. And when he washes, then this guy who was blind all of his life can now see. And so this happens, and all these people, we're like, wait a second, is that that looks like the guy that was blind? And they're like, no, that can't be. I'm like, no, I think it is that guy. And he definitely looks like the guy that was blind. And they're like, no, it is. And then eventually they come to him and says, are you that guy? And he's like, yeah, it's me. And here it says, how then were your eyes opened, they asked. He's like, give me some answers. And the answer was, the man they called Jesus made some mud and put it on my eyes. He told me to go wash to Siloam and wash. So I went and washed. And then I can see. I washed, and now I see. And they're like, oh, okay, well, here, I have some questions for you. Where is the man? I don't know. Okay. And so then the word gets out, and the Pharisees are like, wait a second. This guy says he was healed by Jesus, whatever. Let's talk about him. The religious leaders were like, we want to confirm this. We're not happy about this ourselves. And so then the Pharisees bring him in before them. And it says, therefore, the Pharisees also asked him how he received his sight. How did this happen? Give us some answers. Well, he said, he put mud on my eyes, the man replied, and I washed, and now I see. He clearly didn't have the answers, but he had a story. Mud on my eyes, I was blind, now I see. But it doesn't end there. A second time, they summon the man. First, they talk to his parents. And they're like, hey, was this guy really born blind? Like, yeah, it's him. Can he see now? Well, apparently he can. Well, tell us more about him. Like, you ask him yourself. He's an adult. And so it says, a second time, they summoned the man who had been blind. Give glory to God and tell the truth, they said. We know this man is a sinner. Come on, tell us. Tell us the answer. Is Jesus a sinner? He replied, whether he is a sinner or not, I don't know. But one thing I do know. I was blind, but now I see. Then they asked him again, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? Give us some answers. I've told you already. And you didn't listen. What, you want to hear it again? Wait, do you want to become his disciples now? You heard my story, and now you want some of my Jesus, don't you? Now, they weren't too happy about that. They kicked him out. But see, a lot of times we get caught up in, I don't have all the answers. I'm not that knowledgeable. And I think that's a diversion. I think it's a diversion that keeps us from sharing our story. Don't worry about having all the answers. Just share your story. Tell people about how Jesus changed you. You don't need to know all the answers. Just share your story. And you can say, this is what I know. I was blind, but now I see. I was living this lifestyle, and now I'm living this way. I had no hope, and now I do. Share your story. So the third thing is, don't solve the problems. And this is sort of like the previous one. Don't solve the problems. Instead, invite to experience. Because a lot of times we're always like, well, what if people ask me, like, why is there pain in the world? And if a loving God, why would a loving God send people to hell? And how can God say he's in control if the world is the way it is today? And if God loves me, you know, why did my grandma die? Like, all of these things. And sometimes we're like, I don't want to talk about Jesus because I don't know all the answers. I can't solve all the problems. And that's not really our job either. I remember we did this series called Wounded a long time ago about the book of Habakkuk. And I remember sharing that, you know, God isn't afraid of our questions. We don't need to defend God. Like, he can handle himself. He's God. So instead of worrying about solving all the problems, instead, invite people to experience Jesus themselves. I don't know why all the bad things happen. I mean, maybe I have an explanation, possibly. But here's what I do know. Come and see Jesus yourself. Try him out. Just give him a try. Give him a test drive. Because I think you'll find out that it doesn't really matter if all the questions aren't answered, if all the problems aren't solved, because you're going to see that Jesus is the answer that you need. Over in John chapter 1, verses 45 to 49, it talks about Jesus calling his first disciples. And Jesus calls Philip and says, Philip, I want you to be my follower. I want you to be my disciple. And so then it says, Philip went to look for Nathanael and told him, we have found the very person Moses and the prophets wrote about. His name is Jesus, the son of Joseph from Nazareth. Nazareth, explained Nathanael. Can anything good come from Nazareth? See, Nathanael's like, wait, whoa. How in the world could this guy come from Nazareth? Because we know that a loving God wouldn't send anybody from Nazareth because we hate the Nazarites. Or the Nazarenes, or the Nazarethians, or whatever. He's like, I want an answer. How do we resolve that problem? And this is how Philip replied. Come and see for yourself. Don't take my word for it. I'm not here to solve all the problems. I don't have all the answers. But come and see for yourself. And it says, as they approached, Jesus said, now here is a genuine son of Israel, a man with complete integrity. Well, how do you know about me? Nathanael asked. Jesus replied, I could see you under the fig tree before Philip found you. Then Nathanael explained, Rabbi, you are the Son of God, the King of Israel. So Philip invited Nathanael, just come and see, just like the Samaritan woman, come and see. Try him out for yourself. I'm not here to defend him. You just try him. And I think you'll find out that he is who he says he is, that he is the hope of the world. And so, you know, we don't need to have all the answers. You can simply just say, come and see. Come to church. Come with me. Join me. Come to MC3. I mean, one of the things we like to do is make an environment where people feel somewhat comfortable. You know, we don't add some of the extra things that sometimes other churches have just because we want people to just, don't let us get in the way. Just come and see Jesus for yourself. And if that's something you can do, I mean, we have invite cards out at the info table. We make them on purpose so you can say, yeah, I don't know all the issues or the answers, but come and see Jesus for yourself. And then we can just invite people to experience Him. The next thing is, don't hide your faith. And I think this is something that, I don't know, it probably ebbs and flows. It probably depends on your personality. It depends on where things are in the world right now. I mean, once upon a time, to be called an evangelical was a term that was used by the church that meant really good things. Now that's almost like a swear word in our culture sometimes, depending on who you talk. Oh, you're an evangelical. So that means you hate these people. That means you do these awful things. Like, I'm not affiliated with them. So sometimes it's hard. We want to hide our faith. But instead, we need to shine our light. In Matthew chapter 5, verse 14, and if you grew up in church, you sang a little song about this. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill can't be hidden. Also, people do not light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand. Then it gives light to everyone in the house. See, we are the light. We are supposed to shine. And when we shine, it lights up everything around us. In the same way, let your light shine so others can see it. And look at how Jesus ties these together. Then they will see the good things you do, and they will bring glory to your Father who is in heaven. See, Jesus says, the way we shine is stand out. Be helpful. Let your good deeds, let everybody know, yeah, I'm a follower of Jesus. And it's not because I'm obnoxious, but it's because I'm helping you, because I care about people, because I'm being kind. All of these things. Jesus says, let your light shine. Let people see it. And then they're going to be like, whoa, wait a second. So wait, tell me about your Jesus. Why are you doing this? Why are you acting this way? Why would you give up that for this? And then you can tell people about Jesus. He says, don't hide it. Shine your light. And then they're going to want to know Jesus. So don't hide your faith. And again, I think that's another like, oh, I don't want to offend anybody. I don't want to hurt anybody. I don't want to be the one that turns someone away from Jesus. And I get that fear. But if we're shining like Jesus says, then we're giving light to dark places. Then we're helping people that were in darkness before. And I can tell you, you know, if you've ever been in a large group and the power has gone out, have you ever been somewhere where suddenly it's gotten dark? All of a sudden, that person with the flashlight that happens to carry it around in their pocket, where'd he go? They're the hero because their light shines for everyone. So that's what we are supposed to do, is shine our light. And then finally, don't prove your point. Don't prove your point. Instead, love on purpose. Like, as I said earlier, you know, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And that's a cheesy classic phrase, whatever. But I think sometimes we're so interested in being right and proving why we're right and why Jesus is important and all the, like, that we miss loving people. And when we miss loving people, nobody cares what you have to say. Nobody cares how right you are if you don't love people. And we, I think, get sometimes so distracted. And I'm not saying, I believe in the authority and the inerrancy of the Word of God and how it's important and how we need to do things from a biblical standpoint and they need to be done well and right and appropriately. And doctrine and all those fancy church words, those things matter, but not at the expense of love. And they're not opposites. You don't have doctrine and theology and love. It's a matter of saying, let's bring these together. But I think we leave the love sometimes behind and say, let me show you why I'm right. Let me prove my point. Let me show you how this issue is so important and this is what matters. But instead, we need to love on purpose. Sharing requires love. Now, this is a passage, even if you didn't grow up in church, even if you've never been around a church ever, you probably have heard this at Valentine's Day somewhere in a card or at a wedding. And it's 1 Corinthians chapter 13. And I want you to listen to what this says about how we are to love people. Paul writes to the church in Corinth, "If I could speak all the language of earth and of angels, if I knew it all, if I had all the answers, but didn't love others, I would only be a noisy gong or clanging cymbal. If I had the gift of prophecy and I understood all of God's secret plans and possessed all knowledge, like if I knew it all, if I could see the future, and if I had faith that could move mountains, but didn't love others, I would be nothing. If I gave everything I have to the poor and even sacrificed my body, I could boast about it. But if I didn't love others, I would have gained nothing." See, Paul is saying, it's not about how much we know. It's not about our point. It's about how we love people. So what does that look like, Paul? Well, I'm glad you asked, Sean. Let me answer. Love is patient and kind. Love is not jealous or boastful or proud or rude. It does not demand its own way. It is not irritable. It keeps no records of being wronged. And unfortunately, you're going to have to get that right over the next month, because this series, Sorry Not Sorry, can't hold on to those things. It does not rejoice about injustice, but rejoices whenever the truth wins out. Love never gives up. Love never loses faith. Love is always hopeful and endures through every circumstance. He says, prophecy and speaking in unknown languages and special knowledge will become useless. I could know all that stuff, but that will be useless. But love will last forever. So if we want to reach people for Jesus, we're going to need to do it with love. And that means patience. And I get it. I'm an impatient person. I am not a good person to talk to. Like, I screw up. And I know I'm frustrating to my family. I know people, like, why didn't he get this? Because I'm just a sinner in need of Jesus. And we need to look at the world around us, going back to the beginning of that, and see people the way Jesus sees them. And say, you know what? This isn't the best, but I'll be patient. I'm going to be kind. I'm going to love you through this because I want you to see and understand the hope of Jesus, because he is what matters, because he is the payoff. He is the final piece of this series. So how do we avoid this? We need to avoid these distractions. Don't hate the world. Instead, see like Jesus. And don't have the answers. Don't worry if you don't have the answers. Instead, share your story. And don't solve the problems. You don't need to have all the solutions to all these hard, big issues. Instead, just invite people to experience Jesus. Don't hide your faith. Instead, shine your light. And don't prove your point. Maybe later, maybe after. Say, hey, you want to talk about this some more? That's great, but we're not here to prove our point and prove Jesus. Instead, love people on purpose. So to build your relationship with God, you need to tell others about him passionately. There we go. So here's the last thing. That's passion. That's passion. So summarizing the entire series, building blocks, we're going to have that wall out for another couple of weeks just so we can all continue to, you know, if you forgot to bring some of your blocks in or whatever. But to build your relationship with God, you need to spend time with him daily. This is a personal time with God every day. You need to read his word intentionally. This is intentional time reading the Bible. I would suggest daily. You need to talk to him constantly. This is prayer. This is where you're speaking to God. You're praying to him. You need to worship him privately, not just once a week, but every day. You need to have a lifestyle and an attitude of worship. You need to give to him consistently. And just for the record, next week we're going to talk about giving. About when it comes to spring back, there's some things. It's going to take some giving. I'm excited about it, though. But we have to give consistently. This is what we're called to do. And then we need to connect with Christ followers regularly. We talked about that a couple weeks ago, about locking arms together. We're in this together. And then last week we talked about serving him in ministry, how we are all needed to serve God, and then today, of course, to tell others about Him passionately. These are the building blocks. Let's work on developing these in our own lives. And as we do that, not only are you going to grow and am I going to grow, but we are going to grow as a church. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for your word. Thank you. Thank you for the time and the way we can look at all these different diversions and see that even for our own personal roadblocks, our own personal baggage, that there are ways for us to tell others about you. And God, thank you for giving us hope. Thank you for giving us hope in Jesus, and that He is the source. He is the hope. And I pray that as we have this amazing message to share, and we have a community around us that is desperately in need of hope, that you would allow us, that you would help us to ignore the diversions and to share you with others passionately. And to be able to say, just as that Samaritan woman did, come and see. Come and see the Jesus that has changed my life. And may we see people's lives change, not just for now, but for eternity. Because forever is a long time. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.